Welcome to the D Word, the UK's only weekly internet radio show that talks dementia, with me, your host, Peter Hill. Glad to have you come me for another D Word here on UK Health Radio. 7 years into the show and I'm still learning every day. My guest this week, Mary Bruce, has a passion for educating people about dementia. And 2 years ago, she started Dementia Educators. Mary will be joining me right after Mary Shaping Carpenter and the Mountain Goats. Mary Shaping Carpenter and the Mountain Goats put the message in the box. Well, the message we're concentrating on this week is the power of education with my guest, Mary Bruce from Dementia Educators. Mary, it's great to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word, founder and head of education at Dementia Educators. Before we go on to talking about Dementia Educators, I mean, you're a qualified nurse, you're a university lecturer. What prompted you then to start Dementia Educators?
It's just been a passion of mine throughout my career. So I've been nursing for 38 years, and I've always worked in, 38 years ago, it wasn't called older people's care, it was called geriatric medicine. The terminology has changed massively over the years, but I've always really focused on that, and within that, dementia as well. So from being a nurse and being really involved in dementia, and as a matron, I was the head of dementia when in 2009 when we had our first dementia strategy, when that first came out. So then I thought, right, that's all I want to focus. I want to make as big a difference to as many people as possible. So then I went in to become a lecturer at the university with Professor Dawn Brooker, and she worked with Professor Kitwood, Tom Kitwood. So she worked with him. So she was an amazing person. And I worked there for 13 years. And I loved every minute of it and everything we did. And I taught internationally, we did research. But then I thought, you know what? I want to be able to do what I do for people who can afford to come to university, can afford the university to come to them. I want to be able to do that for the care homes, for the hospitals, for the Women's Institute, for everybody. And having lost both my mother and my father, and many aunts and uncles to dementia over the last 20 years, I just know there's so many people out there that don't have the knowledge that they deserve, the knowledge they need. And so I actually then took that really frightening step of leaving the most amazing people at Worcester University, the most amazing group, and going out on my own to do dementia educators with obviously family members as well, but going out to do it. So that's why I've done it. So it's taken a long time. I wish I'd done it years ago, looking back, but I don't think I would have ever been ready years ago. So I'm ready now. So 2 years down the line, I'm 2 years now, I've been dementia educators full time.
Excellent. You find your way, don't you? I think you find the right time of what's. It's a bit like this show, really. I started it, and if I would have started it 5 years earlier, I don't think it would have worked.
There's lots of different reasons, isn't it? There's not one particular reason, but it's got to be about where you are in your life, how you feel in your life, finance. There's so many things that make a difference. But yeah, it was the right time. And I have loved the last 2 years. I've probably worked more hours in the last 2 years than I've ever worked in my life, but I just love every moment of it.
And one thing I've seen, looking at your website and you on LinkedIn as well, translating dementia theory into practice, which is a massive bugbear of mine, because everybody seems to see stuff in a textbook, but they don't actually go out and, walk the walk and wear the shoes.
Pete, now you're already on it. You're already on it. And I think for me, that's one of the big things because I absolutely love what I do with an amazing passion. I know I've got masses of dementia experience and I've had that for the last 30 years, but I'm also higher education specialist. I know about dementia education. I know about education full stop. And you've got to be able to teach it at the right level, but also be able to understand what you're teaching in a way that other people can understand. Because if they can't understand it, then they're not failing, but it's me. And I think that's one of the most important things, that staff, if they're not taught properly, or anybody, then they won't understand it. And it's a massive, massive skill to be able to teach people so that they walk away and they actually understand what you're talking about. And it is a massive bugbear of mine as well. So yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
We're together in that, most certainly. I mean, one of the things, it's a difficult sell dementia, if I can use that word, because I was in public health and the D word never got mentioned. Diabetes, coronary heart disease, usual suspects, as I called them. I still can't get my head around why it isn't treated as a disease like other health issues, and surely that, that puts a real blockage in the way of people wanting to learn more about it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think we always think about dementia, and it's always been talked about, as in with older people's care, as the Cinderella service. There's less funding goes into it. There's less thought that goes into it. And I think that is one of the issues. And I think what people think is that, oh, well, it's just common sense, isn't it? It's just common sense. So actually, anybody can do it, you know. And I remember, Pete, oh, 35 years ago, 37 years ago, people saying to me, do you know what, Mary? Go into older people's care. Because if you go into older people's care, anybody can do that and you get promoted much quicker. And that was the theory, though, 35 years ago. And there's a little bit about this, you know, people who work in care homes, the healthcare staff, domiciliary care staff, they're not treated with the same respect and the same kudos as those that work in A&E or, you know, in ITU. And actually, for me, if I'm talking about staff, you know, working and supporting people who are living with dementia is probably one of the most skilled, complex areas of care, because you've got to enable and support people at all different parts of their journey who have got every other condition that people have. So they are some of the most skilled people, but actually, we don't put the value into the training around dementia that we should. And that's something that I have seen from, you know, throughout my career, but very much so in a much broader aspect from being a university lecturer. So for over the last 15, 16 years, staff are really not being given the opportunities that they need to provide the best possible care that they can.
Yeah, which is, and it's really sad we've kind of reached this stage. I mean, I started in this kind of business doing hospital radio in the 1980s in what was a large Victorian asylum in North London, for want of a better word. Went into a room which had an eye ceiling, peeling paint, and there were a bunch of people that, looked really old to me at the time. I was kind of 19 or whatever, and all sitting around the television, which was kind of the picture was turning over and over. And I turned around to a nurse and said, what's going on there? And she said, oh, they're all geriatrics. And that was it. I mean, okay, I was, pretty green and wet behind the ears at 19. I just went away thinking, oh, they're all geriatrics.
But that's what we were taught then. That's what we were taught. And you know, that sort of that's what builds the fear up, I think. Because one of the things that people will often say to me is that, you know, why is diagnosis rate so poor? Why are people so fearful? Because actually, if you don't remember where we've come from and see how far we've come, then you don't understand why people in the 80s and 90s now will be saying, actually, don't put me in there. Oh, they won't go forward for a diagnosis, because they remember their grandma being taken away and never being seen again because she went into those institutions. They remember people in the late 80s when they went into these long stay wards, you know, being sedated, being tied to the bread rails, you know, having no choice, no, you know, no freedom. They remember that, and they're fearful, and they don't know things have changed. So I think if we don't understand where we've come from, then we can't understand how maybe some of those older generation are feeling now. But we can't also then reflect upon actually how we also need to change for the future. Things I say, Pete, is if you go, I can look back 40 years ago, and in my training, I talk about 40 years ago, this is what we were doing. And we talk about, like you were talking about, those people sitting around rooms, you know, big, great big teapots with milk and sugar and everything in the teapot. No choice. You had what you were given. That's what we did. But if you went ahead 40 years, yeah, and look back at us now, what would they say? What would they say about us now compared to what, you know, people are shocked when I say what we did 40 years ago, but I wonder what people would say about us now, 40 years ahead, about what we do around dementia now.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Attract your attention. Wish I had the wherewithal to attract your attention. You were so nonpareil. You introduce a new relation in my life. But you were so nonchalant. I don't suppose this new sensation will materialize. I wish I had the wherewithal to attract your attention. Wish I had the wherewithal to attract your attention. If I hadn't inhibitions enough to cope, you come along beautiful and leave me hoping. If it wasn't complicated enough to start with, now you're making this feeling so hard to part with.
Wherewithal to
The Timeless, Clifford D. Ward, and Wherewithal here on the D Word, where it's always good to hear from you. The email is tdwradio@gmail.com, and you can find us on all the social media platforms, Facebook, X, and Instagram. This week I'm chatting to Mary Bruce from Dementia Educators. You know, it's a real conundrum, that one, isn't it, Mary? Yeah, that is the $64,000 question, as they say. I mean, one of the parallels I've got, I had a cancer diagnosis 3.5 years ago. Things fine. But in looking at how I was treated and how people living with dementia are treated, but we both had a disease. Okay, it took different formats or whatever. But it still seems to be this hidden inherent thing of, well, yeah, if you've got cancer or whatever, you go down, we've got this lovely path for you, and down you go, and down you go. If you've got dementia, well, yeah, don't really know where to go.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. I think, you know, and we want pathways. We're not saying we don't want pathways for cancer, and we want to know. But absolutely, if you go in and you've got something, you know that actually there's a time period that you should be seen by and all of these things. We know with dementia, it's a postcode lottery, isn't it? It's a postcode lottery. There are no definitive pathways. There's no definitive guidance. We've got a strategy that has finished. Whilst we still use the work from that strategy, you know, we haven't got a dementia strategy at the moment. So what happens is, you may go to your GP who may be really thinking about it in the way that, okay, there's something going on here. I need to send you on to a memory clinic. Or maybe, you know, one of the big things that happens, and that's why diagnosis for those under the age of 65 is so difficult, because people say, oh, it's the menopause. Oh, it's stress. Oh, it's anxiety, you know, and we see this all the time. And then if people do manage to go forward and then get a diagnosis, so if they do manage, we know the average time is what at the moment, about 2 years it can be. Then if they do go forward, then it's right, this is your diagnosis, and we'll see you in 12 months. So whilst we then get the diagnosis, where are the supportive pathways in place? When we have a cancer diagnosis, we have this cocoon of support around us to help us go through that journey. Whereas for the families I see, and for the person who's had that diagnosis, they're sort of left there, aren't they? And, you know, where do they go and what do they do now? There is a myriad of information out there, but you've got to be able to find it. I do dementia training and research every single day. I'm privileged and honoured to do it. So I can get that information because I know where I'm looking, but other people can't. So you're absolutely right. It's, you know, it's complicated. It depends where you live. You know, in Wales, the average rate of diagnosis at the moment is 52 to 54%. Whereas if you go up to Scotland, we're up to 70%. It's just so changeable upon where you are in the country.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, I had personal experience with my mother-in-law, which basically were two sheets of A4 with a diagnosis on, get on with it. And that was the pathway.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've worked with so many people and from my own experience as well, from family members. But I remember very particularly this husband and wife, and she had dementia. It was young onset, so she was 56 when she was diagnosed. But they went into the GP surgery, having had tests and everything. They went in as husband and wife, okay? And they sat there as husband and wife in that waiting room to go into that appointment with him. They went into that appointment and they came out as patient and carer. The whole of the world and everything around it had changed. She hadn't changed in that 3 minutes of walking in and out. But suddenly how we treat, how we think and how we support people changes. So, yeah, there's you know, when I think about supporting people and how we do it in the right way, we've got to make sure that those people who are working in all those different avenues of primary, secondary and tertiary care all have the skills and knowledge to be able to support people as best as they can. And that's where I'm so passionate about, you know, getting it right for, you know, because we want quality of care, quality of support and quality of life for people who are living with dementia and their families.
Well, I tell you, Mary, that passion is coming straight across down the
I am. So, yeah.
It really is. Now, I've looked at your LinkedIn page, and one of the interesting things, I guess this probably relates to a lot of trainers, that you get things like, well, we've tried that, or, oh, we can't do that because of X, Y, and Z. A really, really interesting quote on there was that routine and culture like that over years, we talked, about 4 years ago. So you're not going to change that overnight, but you still can, you still can change it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. When I do my training, I have staff who are they come out of the training and they're fired up and they're inspired and they want to do things like they want to go and change simple things like the toilet seats. They want them not to be all white. They want, contrast and color, or they want to do this or they want to do that. And they're passionate and they want to make changes. And I have to hold them back and say, right, guys, step back now. Because what we can't do is rush in and make changes quickly. Because if one person does it, then it's not owned. What we've got to do is we've got to where we are. It's taken 40 years to get to where we are. So it's slowly, slowly is going to win this race. And what we've got to do is we've got to have buy-in from everybody. And I think that's for me what's really important. So yes, I have a lot of people that will want to go back, or they'll say to me, but we've tried this before. And they have, but they haven't had ownership and they haven't had the leaders saying, come on, guys, this is what we've got to do. This is how we're going to get it right. And so for me, one of the big things that we've got to make sure is that those people who are on that top level in any organization, wherever it is, whatever it is, that they have the knowledge as well. Because if they haven't got the knowledge, then how are they going to support their staff all the way underneath then to actually do the amazing stuff that they want to do? But we know there's things that we can do without money, without more resources, without more time. We can make an amazing difference if we just understand what we can do in the here and the now. And I think that's really important. It doesn't always take money, time, or resources. We can do a lot with what we've got already.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, those people that, write the policies and are at the top of the tree. I always remember back to it was years ago, there's a Channel 4 program which was called Back to the Floor, where the chief executive of McDonald's went flipping burgers for a day and said, I've learned more flipping burgers for a day than I did in a year sitting in the boardroom. And, maybe we need a bit more of that.
No, absolutely. And I think it's very difficult, isn't it? Because the higher that people get in organizations, and they've got amazing pressures on them as well, and it's very different. But then actually there is that disconnect, isn't there? There's that little disconnect from what people are seeing on the floor. I so often hear when I go anywhere, I'll say, oh, does this happen in your organization? Oh, yeah, absolutely. All the staff know that. Then I go with the staff and I say, right, does this happen? What's that? Never heard of that. And there's this real disconnect. And there's no blame. One of the things with me is, well, this isn't about blaming. Everything that I tell people they shouldn't do, I've done in my 30, 40 years because it's the way things were. This is about recognizing what we do now, thinking about it, and then thinking how we can make it better so that for those people we're supporting, and enabling and giving a better quality of life to that, we can get it right for them. So there's no blame here. This is about saying, what do we need to do differently to make sure that we get it right for the future? Because in the future, it's going to be one of us. And actually, let's get it right for that as well. So, yeah, absolutely.
Good point. In terms of, the increasing rates of people developing dementia, and I guess one thing with, policies. I mean, I won't mention the large charity, but I was on the receiving end of the fact that policies were deemed more important than people. So if we had certain policies on the wall or certain things written down, then that was all everybody was marked on, not actually their individual relationships and knowledge of the people that you were caring for. And I think that's a big lesson, that it's the person in front of that person who's the most important.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. But and I think what we hear a lot is, but we've got this to do, and we've got time restraints, and 100%. I see that all the time. Wherever I work, people say, but actually, we've only got this amount of time and we've got this much to do. And how do we do that? And we've got metrics. We're measured on this and we're measured on that. And it is really about how we can support people with their knowledge base to make the best of what they've got at the moment. So one of the things that I always say to people is, you know, that actually if people understand about dementia, now very much I'm talking about everybody, but specifically we're talking now about staff who are providing care, whether it's in hospitals, care homes, domiciliary care, GP surgeries, wherever it is, if they can understand more about dementia and understand how to support people in the best possible way, knowing that person, understanding them as an individual and what they need, actually what we can do is we can stop having to have de-escalation because we haven't had escalation in the first point. So what we can do is if we can treat people with dignity and respect and actually understand that when we treat people in this rushed way and maybe their cognitive ability is lessened, so they're not quite sure what's going on, then we can make people very anxious, very distressed. And you and I would act in exactly the same way. It is no different. But the minute we see somebody with dementia who is behaving in a way that seems more confused, more upset, more vulnerable, then they're labelled. And the minute we label, then we treat differently. And, you know, and I think that we need to just really, really think about that person-centred, understanding the person. But in order to be able to do that, you have to understand what dementia is and what it isn't. You really do. I mean, I often hear people, you know, and I'm surprised and I'm shocked, but I never show it, hopefully, that will say to me, Mary, what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? You know, and, you know, and I'm not talking about very junior staff either. Now, obviously, if they've never been taught that, they don't know. But how can we work in a field where we're supporting people? We're being healthcare providers and social care providers, supporting families, giving guidance. If we ourselves don't feel confident about the knowledge we have. And I'll go back to my question. What will they say 40 years? Yeah. They will look back and say that you couldn't go into a care home or a hospital and go into the kitchen because you hadn't done your food handling and hygiene course. You couldn't use manual handling equipment because you hadn't done your manual handling course. But anybody could go into care without having the necessary and right training how to support somebody with dementia to give them person-centered holistic care, and they can go in and they can do it without any training. And I think this is one of our big failings. We have sometimes tokenistic training for staff, and therefore they don't really get the need and the knowledge and the skills that they need to support what they do.
Done my share of drinking. Well, I knew every bar in town. Well, you were probably thinking that I'd be long gone by now. But I'm stronger than I used to be. Nothing like the younger me. You put my feet back on the ground. If something's gonna kill me, it'd be not having you around. It's coffee now for breakfast. No more whiskey on my breath. When you said you were leaving, girl, that scared me to death. Oh, my life flashed before my eyes. The words you spoke cut like a knife. Help me put that bottle down. If something's gonna kill me, it'd be not having you around.
kill me. Me not having you around. If something's gonna kill me, me not having you around.
Vince Gill, and not having you around. This week, dementia education is our subject with my guest, Mary Bruce. You know, technology is a wonderful thing, but also is responsible for a bit of that, because I can, you know, I can about that. I've done online safeguarding, for example. I've ticked boxes, and yet, you know, I don't feel that I've mastered the subject because I haven't met anyone or seen anything that's relevant. And yet, I, you know, I end up with a sort of running off on the printer a certificate in it.
Or, let's be honest, Pete, you've let it run, you've gone off, made yourself a cup of tea, you've come back,
yep,
and you haven't even watched it all. And, you yep know, this is what staff tell me, you know, they tell me this all over the country, yeah? This is what I hear all the time, that, you know, now, I think we've moved since COVID. I think, you know, IT and training online has become amazing because we were forced into it, weren't we? I know we were at the university. We suddenly had to change and I had to do everything, you know, online. So we were forced and had to do it. And I think we've now developed and we've moved forward massively in the last 5 years. And there's some exceptional, exceptional online training developed by exceptional people who are not only dementia specialists, but they're IT geniuses as well. And they can do that. But we've also got some that aren't and, you know, that don't give the staff what they need. And like you say, you know, if they've never met somebody or they've got questions and they can't get them answered. So, yeah, it's complicated. I think it's complicated. But I do genuinely think that, you know, we have moved forward in the since COVID purely because we've had to from an IT perspective. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I fully agree. We, you know, we certainly have. I mean, it's really, you know, interesting the perspective you're giving us. You can kind of going back 40 years. And I'm thinking going back 40 years to my grandmother, who's a very Victorian London lady who lived till she was 101. And
oh, wow.
40 years ago, she would be in the pub with her friends and the C word would be hushed. Every time kind of cancer came up, it would say whisper, whisper and whatever. Whereas, you know, I often wonder what she would now think in the same scenario 40 years later. And I suspect it would be the D word that got hushed and they would be more comfortable talking about the C word.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we all talk about cancer now, don't we? You know, openly and proudly and rightly so, you know, and people share their stories. And it's so important because, you know, it's the way we move forward. It's the way we support people. But dementia is still, you know, people don't like to talk about it. I remember when my mum was diagnosed with dementia and she was diagnosed in 2006. So, you know, some 20 years ago. But I can remember my dad saying, he said to me at the time, so what are we going to say to people then? I said, well, what do you mean, Dad? And he said, well, what will we tell people that she's got? I said, she's got dementia. And he said, no, but we can't tell people because there was a little bit of this, you know, dementia is that, I mean, years ago, it used to be, you know, you were senile. It wasn't dementia, it was senility. You were mad or you were bad. And that's what we were talking about 40 years ago. You know, and some cultures even now don't have the words for dementia, or dementia is seen that, you know, in certain cultures that actually you get this because maybe you've done something wrong or something's happened. So even now we've got to be very aware that, you know, globally, the term dementia isn't openly used, but also here, for sure, within the UK, people are still very reticent because it's so labelled, isn't it? And the stigma, you know, the minute you hear somebody's got dementia, people stand back and they treat you differently. And nobody wants to be treated differently. Nobody wants to be treated like a child or infantilised or any of that. But it happens the minute you have that label. It's as if you can't make any decision for yourself at all. It gets taken away from you. A bit like that couple I was saying, they went in as husband and wife, equal partners, and they came out as patient and carer, because suddenly the whole of society sees them as two different people.
Yeah, that's a great story, I think, you know, one for people to concentrate on. And I think the other thing is the use of language generally. One of the things, you know, the question of what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia was probably the most prominent question my friends asked me, you know, when I started doing all this and still do. But one of the things I've got in life is that I talk to people with all types of dementia. I talk to people with short-term memory loss. I talk to people who've got no short-term memory loss, yet they all get diagnosed at the memory clinic. And that kind of resonates with me thinking, well, wait a minute, why are we calling it that?
Absolutely, absolutely. You're setting me off again now. Absolutely. Because isn't that one of the reasons why, you know, we know that dementia is the biggest fear of the over 55s. We know the research tells us this. We know we've got poor diagnostic rates in the UK, you know, and we know that, you know, they've gone down, haven't they, from 68% in 2019 to, what, 64, 65% at the moment post-COVID. So we know all of that. And actually, people always think about dementia from a memory perspective that, you know, oh, well, it's all about memory change or, you know, forgetting things or repeating the same question over and over again. And to be fair, that's true, isn't it, with Alzheimer's? Because we know with Alzheimer's dementia that actually the first symptoms are often about around the temporal lobes and around memory. But that's 60% of dementias is Alzheimer's, which is the majority. But only 60%. So 40% of dementias can start from some other part of the brain. So, you know, and often in younger people, for young onset dementia, we're going to be thinking about things where it's the frontal lobe. So maybe it's disinhibition behaviour. Maybe it's social inappropriateness. There's lots and lots of different things. Maybe it's word finding. Maybe, you know, it's all these different things. And by having, for me, I absolutely agree, by having something called the memory clinic, if you haven't got problems with your memory, then actually, why would you be going there? And people don't associate these other symptoms that you can have as dementia. You know, and I was talking to a friend recently. She's in the police, and we were talking. You know, it's whenever anybody talks to me, wherever you are, it always ends up on dementia. It has to be. That's my life. It's what I do. And we were talking about it, and she's in the police, and she was saying, you know, we often go to these calls where people will be, you know, shouting or doing these different things, but they haven't got memory problems, so we know they haven't got dementia. And I'm going, no, you don't. And I'm not saying everybody who behaves anything in a certain way has dementia, but we've got to recognise that memory is not the only issue that people will come forward with. There's lots of other things that people will have as their first symptoms rather than just memory. So it being called the memory clinic is confusing. Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%.
Strange.
And it does stop people going forward for a diagnosis because they don't see these other things, you know, as issues that potentially could be dementia.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach. Here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Do you think sometimes we don't see the wood for the trees, using an old expression, in the fact that dementia is very complicated, and let's not get away from that. But sometimes, you know, like we've just been discussing about the naming of a memory clinic, sometimes we just don't see what's straight in front of us.
100%. I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's strange, isn't it? Because there's a couple of things, because whilst I talk about this, and about memory and it being different things, you know, and we're talking around diagnosis. One of the other things that I know is really common is that so often people might be a bit worried about their memory or have concerns. They might be older, you know, so maybe 70, 80, even in their 90s. And they might say to somebody, oh, do you know what? I'm ever so worried about this, or I'm ever so worried about that. And what families and friends immediately do go, oh, don't worry about it. We all do that. Yeah. Or they say, oh, it's just your age. And they're very dismissive. And actually what I say is we don't know it's dementia. It could be an interaction of medications. It could be an infection. It could be hypothyroid. It could be a vitamin B12 deficiency. So why do we give false reassurances when we have no idea? And one of the things I say to people is, if I had a breast lump, and I said to somebody, oh, got a bit of a breast lump, they would never say, oh, don't worry about it. We've all got that. Straight away, people would say, it's probably fine, but you must get it checked out. And I think there's this, we don't like talking about dementia. We are confused by the symptoms. But then when somebody does come forward, even with symptoms of memory loss, what we want to do is give false reassurance, because it's easier to do that. And what we can do is we can be missing the opportunity for them to go forward, and maybe it's not dementia, it's something else. And even if it is dementia, having a diagnosis, a timely diagnosis, is incredibly important, because there's so much that we can do to support the person to live as long as they can, as well as they can at this moment in time. So I think it's a real one that, you know, for me, it's about saying to people, stop trying to give false reassurance, be open, be honest, be transparent, and support people to go forward, because it might be something else.
Absolutely.
Don't rush into dementia.
Yeah, and you know, as you quite rightly said, if it is dementia, again, going back the theme of our discussion, go back 40 years and there probably wasn't a lot, if anything at all, whereas now we have moved on and, you know, things have become a lot better. Sadly, time is bringing us to a bit of a close, but the one thing I've realised from our conversation is I'll have to get you back on and continue talking like this, because I having done this show for nearly 7 years now, I didn't have any qualifications in dementia or whatever, but I've learned such a lot from people like yourself and all the people that I've spoken to. And again, I absolutely applaud your real world approach, because I think that is what is going to, you know, get us to where we want to go.
Thank you. Thank you. No, thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. And the more that we can get out and talk about dementia and make people more aware, then we actually will make a massive difference. Absolutely.
Well, Mary, for now anyway, thanks for being my guest, and keep on doing what you're doing.
Oh, no, thank you, Pete. Lovely to speak to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Sir Mary, and we'll definitely get her back on the show to talk some more. In the meantime, check out the website, demed.co.uk. www.cliansvocals.uk. Well, that's all for this week. Thanks to Angela, my production assistant. Next week, I'm going to be joined by dementia advocate Andy Woodhead. So until then, thanks for listening and take care now.